Wells here with Luca Riggi, and he's going to be sharing a little bit
exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on his employment work. So, you were recently telling me that some upcoming cuts to the employment sector might have a disability impact. Can you kind of highlight that?
Absolutely, Cam. In the budget of this year for 2024, the federal government has agreements with each province called labor market development agreements and workforce development agreements. These agreements provide funding from the federal government to the provincial government to address local labor market issues, whether that be the inclusion of folks with disabilities or emerging industries. It's a way for provinces to address issues locally. So these the labor market development agreement had a top up in 2017 of $625 million. With this budget, that amount of money has been reduced. So across the country, there will be $625 million less going to the provinces to support labor market issues. And this is going to directly affect organizations that support individuals. Many of the individuals that we support are supported through federal programs, provincial programs, but so is the organization. So the organizations get support to be able to be open to help individuals through these programs. And so it's going to be a reduction. Now, while we haven't seen it roll out completely across the country yet, we do know that Saskatchewan and Newfoundland and Labrador are going to be impacted greatly. In Newfoundland and Labrador, there's conversations happening now about a 35% cut to the folks with disabilities support. And so that's going to mean over 200 people could lose their jobs. So it's quite a challenging time. And it's unfortunate because the federal and provincial government both have said that they support employment diversity and including folks with disabilities. But being caught in the middle of a funding dispute means that folks are going to be impacted, and there's still not a solution yet.
So, when you mention federal supports, do you have any thoughts on the recent failings of Canada Disability Benefit?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because we're also having the conversation of, it seems to be really quite a disappointment to have the federal government say you could lift yourself out of poverty with $6 a day. It's incredulous to think that the government across the country are still trying to have conversations about whether or not this benefit will be clawed back. It was termed a supplement so that people could have additional resources related to having a disability and trying to lead a progressive life that's, you know, inclusive. But it's really quite disappointing. And while I appreciate the minister saying that this is the beginning point, we waited an awful long time to get this much. We don't want to wait the same amount of time to get more.
So, with the eligibility restrictions for this benefit, starting point may actually be so discouraging that someone with a disability might not even make the attempt to get it.
And not only that, in order to get the Canada Disability Benefit, you have to be able to be eligible for the Disability Tax Credit. And for any folks that are listening, they know that, you know, getting the Disability Tax Credit is similar to climbing Mount Everest. You might make it, but you could die before the end.
So, do you have any advice for folks out there who might be seeking an alternative or a redress of some of these matters, just to get themselves better educated and be prepared for what could be coming to the labor market?
Absolutely. I think that the key here is that the folks and individuals that are affected by, whether it be this disability benefit, the cuts to employment, we have to start writing to the members of the legislative assemblies across the country, as well as the MPs. Now, many advocates, you know, Cam, have been having ongoing conversations with the federal government and provincial governments. They all say the same thing. Yes, we're very interested in including folks with disabilities in our economy, but we're having some funding challenges. Well, funding challenges don't wait when somebody needs a job. And we all know the best answer to a social issue is to give somebody the opportunity to participate in the labor force and then let them make the decision on what's important. The challenge here is for folks to understand that putting people in poverty and then talking about raising them out of poverty seems to be an oxymoron. We can't have both conversations at the same time. We need to be focused on lifting people out of poverty to better health, to better well-being. That alone will save the government the money that they've invested in programming. A prime example would be, we assisted 208 individuals with autism to come off income support. So even if they had the minimum, maybe they were only getting $500 or $600 a month. 200 people, that's over $100,000 a month that the government no longer has to spend. And never mind the calculation of, what about including all of the money that some of these folks are now making? They're taxpayers. They're spending money in the economy. So, you know, as I once heard somebody say, you know, government is often penny wise and pound foolish. So in the process of reducing these amounts of money, they will make people live for longer in poverty.
So that brings up an interesting point. I mean, there's the idea of generational poverty. Some of these people might be having children who were born into a poverty situation through no fault of their own and might expect nothing better of life, not knowing the options available to them.
You know, and that's very clear, Cam, in the struggles we see for folks who are neurodiverse and their families. When children were born, they were told by their government, by their community, we will be here to support you. We will support your child in school and education. We see a place for them. And what parents have learned is that is not always the case. And government has sometimes abdicated their responsibility to ensure that people are included because of another priority. So people need to be assured that they're included, and people are feeling like they're not. And while the benefit was a great win, it's a very small win when you consider how many people aren't actually even going to be eligible for it. And for the folks that are in poverty, $6 doesn't make a whole lot of difference when your disability costs are quite high. So it's disappointing. So education and vocal opposition to what people see as good policy, they need to be explained that this policy doesn't work for most of the folks you've designed it for. So it's good education and good advocacy work for all that are involved.
Well, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Will do.
Thanks. So, my friends, last week we heard a couple of on-location interviews from the ICHA Fishing Derby. We're going to hear a couple more in just a moment, and there'll be some in next week's show as well. So, coming at you, a couple of segments on location from the Derby.
Cam Wells here with Bruce Thompson. He's going to be telling us a little bit about his ongoing work to support the ICAJ Fishing Derby. So what brings you back year after year?
It's such a great event. It's really hard to put into words. You see all the volunteers and all the kids, and you make a difference. They're really happy to see us.
So you find this event is typically well-received, and for persons with disabilities, being able to be included is well-received by our community.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got kids that are as young as 1 and 2 years old in strollers, and we've got adults that are handicapable that 50, 60, 70 years old. Everyone's included. There's no difference in any of them.
So, do you see yourself continuing to be a part of this event?
Yeah, definitely. It's I can't answer that one. Pat won't let me quit. So,
what impact do you think an event like this has on the community?
Not really sure. I mean, it's getting bigger every year. It's more exposed. More people coming down every year. I think it makes a difference. It's just such a great event.
Thank you very much. This is Cam Wells here with Luca Riggi, and he's going to be sharing a little bit about his thoughts on helping out at the ICAJ Fishing Derby. So what brings you back year after year?
Well, what brings me back is the nice, lovely weather that happens every year, and it's a nice view also of the water. It's a lovely community that's also built up around here, which is nice to also look at, too. And it's just a nice place overall to hang out in.
So, do you find that this is typically a well-received event by the community? Do you find that supporting individuals with disabilities brings people together in a meaningful way?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it actually helps people be more of themselves without having to fear that something bad may possibly happen to them.
So, in your time helping out at the Derby, has there been any success moment or memory that stands out for you?
There's quite a few. For instance, Pat singing his songs that he always does. The lovely food here, again, interact with some of the community as time goes on as much as I can.
So, why do you feel events like this are important for the community?
Well, I like to think that they're important for the community because it's just pretty much at that point a central hub for people to relax at with no worries, and everyone can just be themselves. And I think it's pretty important for a community because a lot of people, they kind of struggle a little bit with that.
Thank you very much. This is Cam Wells here with...
I'm Cassandra, the Forest Fairy.
And she's going to be telling us a little bit about coming to help out at this year's ICAJ Fishing Derby. So this is kind of a new person here.
Yeah. This is an original character. I've played around with her over the last few months, and she's been a unicorn, she's been a fairy, she's been a forest fairy now. It's just fun. Using the same outfit over and over again, it's lots of fun to do something creative with it.
So, from what you've seen in this year's Derby, do you find it's going to be an overall positive experience for
participants? Oh, it always is. It's so much fun, and everybody has a blast, especially when they get to catch a fish.
And in previous years, you've seen the impact this event has on the community. Do you think it's continuing to do so, or has grown in any way?
Oh, absolutely. There's new people coming every year, and it gets bigger and bigger.
Is there any particular memory or fond moment from one of these you want to share?
Well, Princess Anna caught a fish one year, which was lots of fun. And then, I believe, was it Backhoe that caught one last year?
I believe so. As I recall, she had to turn it over as evidence.
Yes, because it ended up floating away instead of going swimming under the ocean.
So,
you see yourself continuing to be a part of this and helping out?
Yes, absolutely. EA Parties is a big supporter of this event, and it's partly because, you know, our owner, Sylvia, also works with students with disabilities in her full-time job and her career, and this is very close to her heart.
She's a great lady, by the way. What do you think the importance of having persons with disabilities included in the community is?
Oh, it's very important because it gets them out in the community. It gets people seeing them and interacting with them at the same time. It's socialization. There's so much to it. And they shouldn't just be alone at home. They should be out in the community having a good time just like everybody else.
Thank you very much.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Writing Support Desk is a free service available to all University of Windsor students from all disciplines and levels of study. The Writing Support Desk helps students hone their own writing and editing skills to empower them to submit their best work possible. It also helps students to understand assignment prompts, construct strong arguments, and to properly cite sources. The Writing Support Desk is currently available online through one-on-one consultations and workshops via Microsoft Teams and Blackboard Virtual Lounge. For the most up-to-date information, visit uwindsor.ca/writing support.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Sean Wiltshire gave us an update on his employment efforts, and we heard some on-location spots from the recent ICHA Fishing Derby, featuring Bruce Thompson, Luca Riggi, and Enchanted Adventure Parties. Following interview was a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Glenn Lethbridge will be telling us a little bit about adaptive sailing. So what can you tell me about some of the adaptive sailing programs you offer?
So Ontario Sailing's the provincial sport governing body for sailing in Ontario. So we work with primarily our clubs to have their own adaptive programs. Some call them Able Sail programming. Ontario Sailing also has a program that we use to help build programs around the province. Ontario Sailing, and I've been with Ontario Sailing for almost 18 years, but I believe Ontario Sailing about 30 years ago started supporting adaptive sailing programs and helping to create and set up programs around the province. So we had a mobile sailing school with small sailboats, specialized sailboats from Australia, and also a training boat called a Martin 16 that we would take, work with clubs, train instructors, work with them to get grants or raise money so they could have their own fleets of boats, and then do ourselves out of a job and move on to the next club, because that's what we want to do. We want the club to run the program. And Ontario Sailing has continued that. There's probably, because of such a great growth in Able Sail programming, we're doing more of maintenance with clubs. Clubs ebb and tide. They get new leadership. So when a club decides that, you know, they want to start a program, or maybe they're kind of done with the program, we will work with another club to see about retaining those specialized boats that the other club may have and start their own program.
So I'm curious, how do you reach out to clubs that could potentially start an Able Sail program, and how do you work alongside them to help build this idea?
A lot of it is communications. It's like any volunteer organization, whether it's in our case, yacht clubs or boating clubs, churches, community groups, service groups. You typically get a champion that starts to talk to you. It's today, you know, this is so-and-so club, and, you know, we run a youth sailing program and an adult program, but, you know, we don't have anything for athletes or sailors with a disability. And, you know, what would be involved in setting that up? So, you know, our staff, who have a lot of experience, not only in running programs, but also in working with athletes and sailors with a disability, you know, we'll go through with them, you know, everything that's kind of involved, right from the boats to if there's any extra training that somebody needs. Typically, it's not much. It's just, you know, there is a module that an instructor and coach can take to just go over sort of the nuances of it's equipment like Hoya lifts. If a individual, for instance, is a paraplegic, you know, getting them into the boat. Once they're in the boat, typically, you know, they're treated the same as anybody that's in the boat, regardless of age or you know, or ability. You know, once they get in the boat, they can sail it on their own. But it's really just going, you know, through the mechanics, and that. And it's actually how much easier it is to set up a program than they may think. That's, you know, that's probably the key in helping to set up a program.
So what are some of the benefits for someone with a disability of being on the water? I'd imagine certainly a calming effect.
Many. First of all, you know, we've heard from so many individuals that get out in the water that it's almost like freedom. There's no impediment put in front of them. Once they get in the boat, as I said, you know, they may need some help to get into the boat, but once they're there, the boats are set up to be able to sail very easily. They're a little bit more, some of them are a little bit more specialized. They won't capsize. But once they get there, you know, they can sail as equal to if you or I were in another one of the boats. You know, they can sail against us just as easily, and that's what they really, really like. As you move up in sailing, and in the different types of boats, there's a boat called a 2.4, which is basically 2.4 meters long, so it's like a little keelboat, and it was the Paralympic boat when sailing was in the Paralympics. But that class sails with able-bodied and disabled sailors alike. They sail head-to-head, one against the other, equally, and it's an amazing class. They, you know, there's no benefit you know, to one or another person. They're sailing with their, you know, with their skills of knowing the wind, the water, and they love it. You know, so it's a totally open class, which is really the goal that we all want to see. So yeah, I, you know, just the smiles on people's faces, especially youth, when they get into the boat, it's so empowering, and so delightful to, you know, to see that.
So, in your time developing adaptive sailing programs, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Well, you know, there's a number of them. When I can work with a club to have them, I'm working with a club right now that is looking at starting a program, and, you know, in a year maybe, you know, when they have the boats at their dock and participants in the boats and a coach trained, that's what makes me come to work every day, you know, to see a new program flourishing. We run a program in Toronto for 2 weeks, And it's for youth, and seeing our coach work with youth over a two-week period, he also trains other coaches and instructors during that time, so they can see, you know, firsthand. That's what I get excited about. And once somebody gets in the boat, these particular boats are called it's Access 303s, and they're from Australia. And they were designed in Australia, built in Australia. A bit of a challenge to get them here to Canada. But once you see a participant, sometimes they take a family member with them, which they're welcome to do. You know, once you see them get in the boat and start sailing the boat, following the instructions of the instructor and coach, going around marks, getting them so they are then, you know, the master of their craft, so to speak. I'm as excited as I was over 40 years ago when I started teaching sailing. You know, and seeing, you know, anybody just get in a boat and, you know, after a few days mastering in a safe way, you know, sailing it.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Sean raised a particularly important point. Persons with disabilities can't raise themselves out of poverty with an extra $6 a day. While I grant this may be a starting place, it should at least begin with something that would seem to do something real, something tangible. Yes, a person with a disability might benefit in some small way from the extra income, but honestly, it cannot be a matter of you give with one hand and take with the other. And the recent cuts he mentioned, or the potential cuts, could be for persons with disabilities, from an income standpoint, just devastating. Truth of the matter is, these governments should be working with persons with disabilities, asking them what their real needs are, understanding the particulars of what it will cost, what is necessary to help these individuals break that cycle of poverty. Honestly, this is one of the most difficult aspects of disability life. For a person who's lived with generational poverty, for example, it can be that is all we expect out of life. We don't believe there is anything better as far as we're concerned. But for someone with a disability who's able to work, who's able to contribute, and have their basic needs met, it can be that they can be a great participant in society because they know what their rights are, they know they have something to offer, and yeah, they might even be encouraged to do something with those gifts. And we as a people need to recognize their value as workers, as citizens, maybe even as friends. But the first step is always taking a moment to understand the realities of the situation. Yeah, it's easy for the government to write a check for whatever amount and pretend the problem isn't a problem. But honestly, disability is not a hat. You don't just take it off at night when you're out of public view or when it gets uncomfortable. This is an ongoing need in what are some very real lives, my friends. A person with a disability has to pay, for example, higher prices for a gluten-free diet because their condition, such as celiac, impacts them in such a way that they can't get just whatever might be on the shelves. And honestly, this has to be taken into consideration. You can't just throw money at the problem and say, there, you're good. You have to recognize there are so many layers in disability life, so many wonderful and diverse levels. But working alongside such people, you can come to understand that they won't see it necessarily as, oh, this is a problem, fix it, fix it. They will see it as just the way they live, a set of adaptations. If you understand anything about disability life, you tend to understand that it's just another way of thinking in many ways. It's looking at, can we do things this way? Perhaps not. What way can we do it? This has been HandyLink.
I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me, you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.